Hi, I'm Eureka John, and welcome back to Crypto Sapiens. Today, I'm at the Unrestricted Intelligence Summit and doing a little bit of gonzo journalism here, impromptu journalism. One of the speakers here at this summit is Paul Allen, and I'll let him introduce himself and his project and what he's doing here. And this is overall a very enlightening summit conference. It's a little side event off of South by Southwest here in Austin, Texas. All right, so anyway, Paul, thanks for coming on here. Just tell me a little bit about yourself, what project you're doing and the problem it's trying to solve.
So I appreciate being invited to speak at Unrestricted Intelligence. I think that the world is on the cusp of unleashing human intelligence and human augmentation like never before, but there are potentially big, huge obstacles ahead, like governments and corporations trying to control and decide how we can and can't use the technologies. And these are potentially the greatest tools ever created to help us learn more, apply things better, take the world's best models for health, finance, career, leadership, family, politics, government, take the finest models, the examples that we all admire, and learn how to grow into those ourselves and to quickly achieve mastery of anything we're trying to learn how to do or know what we should know. And I just think it's fantastic. So I'm pleased to be here at this side conference with a lot of people that are thinking about decentralization and distributed platforms and open source models. And how can we unleash all of these things collectively so that every one of us on Earth can benefit from these new tools that are blowing my mind almost every day? That's an understatement. You can just pick up GPT-4 voice. You can design an AI assistant to teach you a language. You can give it a few rules verbally, and then it starts teaching you the language and following your rules. And you have a personalized tutor to help you learn any language. And that takes a few minutes and to be able to commercialize that or scale that up. So anyway, the SOAR AI platform, the company that I'm the CEO of, is forming 15 corporations in the next 3 years. We've already formed 6. We've got a few more coming out this year. And each corporation is aimed at helping humans thrive in one area of life or another. So if you think about all the things that matter most to humans, family probably matters more than anything else. So there's a family portal that will use AI to help you contact and communicate with all your living relatives, interview them, learn their life stories, deepen your ties, extract genealogical data from all your interviews with all your relatives, and have a family experience across space and time that will deepen your respect and appreciation for your ancestors and allow you to pass on really important stories and traits to your children and grandchildren. So family portal is one. Friendship turns out to be one of the most important ingredients in a life well lived. And I think that Meta or Facebook completely ruined the word friend. And you don't have 1,000 friends or 5,000 friends. You're very blessed if you have 3 or 4 really dear, life-giving friends. Gallup would call them vital friends. And so we're launching a friend portal later this year that will allow you to take an assessment to actually find out who are your real friends and what role do they play in your life and what role do you play in their life and how can you align your expectations with what they naturally bring you so that you're never disappointed with each other, so that your friendship lasts forever. Because Gallup scientists found that the number one reason why relationships break down is the person expects you to be something or do something that you can't be or do. And so aligning expectations with natural ability is the key to having long-term relationships. So the friend portal, family portal are important. Our first big project was the citizen portal. Citizenportal.ai, which is taking every government meeting in the United States that's recorded and posted anywhere on the web, and it's transcribing all those meetings, having keyword search engines, so you can find out what every elected official across the country is doing and saying in every school board, city council, state legislature, congressional hearing, and then use GPT-4 on top of it or retrieval augmented generation. The goal of that project is to help every American citizen become completely informed about what their representatives are doing in government. also voting, also spending, but especially what are they saying every time they meet? As our representatives, we should know what they're doing. And this AI system will soon give you a personalized voter scorecard so that before you walk into the voting booth, you'll know with the help of AI who best represents you on the issues you care about locally, at the state, and at the federal level.
Okay, so there's oral tradition in family and friends and passed down, and that's kind of how we did it before. I want to get to this citizen AI part, but I want you to, you said some statistic, I don't know if it's just statistic or not earlier, but about how oral tradition and people, kids knowing their family's stories inspire a sense of stability in family. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think you're referring to Emory University's psychologists in 2001 did a study. They found out that the number one predictor of resilience in children is how much they know about their family stories. And what they found is that if you go back far enough, every single family narrative consists of two different threads. They call it an oscillating narrative, but it's an ascending narrative where we immigrated, our great-great-grandparents immigrated with nothing, and then they built a successful life here, and that's an ascending narrative. Okay. Every family has some ascending narratives, quite a few of them. And then you have a descending narrative where there was a calamity, a disaster, there was a divorce or a sickness, and the family was really decimated, and then they had to rebuild, and that was a descending narrative. Well, every single family has oscillating narratives, and when a child is exposed to both of those sets of narratives, then when they are confronted with a hardship, like they get bullied or they fail something, it's like, put in the context of my long family history, we've been able to deal with things like this. I'm not alone in my suffering. I'm connected to a strong family. I have ancestors who weathered bigger storms than I have, including wars and immigration. And so, yes, the biggest predictor of resilience in children and the biggest missing ingredient today with our mobile, non-multi-generational family structures is we don't know the stories of our aunts and uncles and grandparents and great-grandparents. But if we did, the children of today would be much more strengthened by those stories.
Absolutely. And we can see a lot of that in the suicide rate nowadays, a lot of people feeling alone and depressed, and that might alleviate some of that solitude that a lot of people feel, is to know, even though the person might not be there with them in real life in their meat space, you know, maybe by knowing the story, they don't feel so alone.
My great grandfather wrote his autobiography, and I've read it a couple of times, and I feel very close to him. I never met him. He died 20 or 50 years before I was born. I heard about a relative the other day who's very attached to their seventh great grandparent who wrote a book about his life. And his mother said, he's being partly raised by his seventh great grandparent. I'm like, if you go back 10 generations, John, you have 1,000 ancestors whose life stories are now passed forward. And you're made up of the threads of their, not only their DNA, but their stories and the courage and their heroics. Like, you could draw from that strength. That collective strength is so profound and so ignored that it's time that, you know, like you said, the deaths of despair, I think, are preventable by friends and family ties, as well as faith and community ties. Yeah. And Gallup studies the well-being of the whole planet, and we're trying to follow their framework for studying well-being and implementing AI projects that will actually help enhance the well-being of all humans in all areas that Gallup studies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And AI with the large language models is able to handle all that data. And I always say that we, every single interaction that we do in the cyberspace, the metaverse, is descending upon us. Everything we do collects data and is and creates data. Everything we post online, all our mortgage payments, our health insurance transactions, all that is data. And AI needs that to eat, like the large language models. And if we could basically own that data and be paid for that data, that's almost like a UBI, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you have anything.
No, I actually loved Andrew Yang's candidacy, and I've been studying UBI for a long time, and I do think data is the new oil, and I think AI with data will usher us into a new era of potentially abundance, not scarcity. I just think we're on the cusp of something if it doesn't get controlled or shut down. But I do think that that there are really important things. Data is usually noise. There's something about finding the signal in that noise that if we could figure out collectively how to find the signal. Well, I think another way of saying that is Dr. Don Clifton, who invented the StrengthsFinder assessment at Gallup, he said, you become successful by studying success. So of all the talk tracks and interviews and lectures and meetings, of all the human communication that will be recorded and transcribed and searchable and usable by AI, who are the people who have voices that are actually telling you the right steps or paths to success and to thriving? So for example, you know, no one trusts a skinny chef is a funny saying, but who do you trust? What leaders do you actually trust that they're saying something that's number one, true, and number two, in your best interest? Do you trust corporations that are trillion-dollar companies that are trying to hit their bottom line every, you know, pad their bottom line and hit their quarterly earnings numbers? Or are they compelled by their job to say things that are helping their company, and not helping you? Like, are you the product they're selling? Do they take your data and everything they can find out about you and augment? They go buy grocery data from Axiom and spending data and travel data. They put it all together into your profile so they can build an algorithm that consumes all your time and attention because they can know exactly what your weaknesses are and then get you to buy things that are advertised by the highest bidder who's willing to pay the most money for your time and attention. Okay, what if we reverse that and say, no, you're in charge of the AI. You're in charge of designing the algorithm that will help you live the best possible life in every area of life, education, workplace, family, faith, friendship, hobbies, all your interests, finance, legal, health, medicine, everything. Okay, so imagine a world where it's decentralized, it's open source, it's distributed, and you get to find the signals in the noise and the models that you look up to, role models or leadership models or sales models or other models. I love the word model. Dick Fosbury was a high jumper, and I think people used to laugh at him when he created the Fosbury flop. I think it might have been a pejorative name. And then he broke a record or something, and pretty soon everyone realized you have to follow that high jumping model to be a world-class high jumper. I don't know anyone who does the scissor jump anymore. They all use Fosbury flop. Well, if you want to find the best salesperson, the best leader, the best HR person, a person who speaks with truth and empathy, someone who exudes inclusiveness and generosity or whatever the virtue, whatever the trait, find a model of it and then invite the AI to help you on a day-by-day basis walk the walk and talk the talk until you're living up to that model. We all could have exemplars or role models in our lives, and we could live healthier than ever before because we're following a pattern that someone has said that's a true pattern that will work for us. Now, we don't think there's a one size fits all for anything. I have a different neurological set of pathways than you do. I think, act, and feel differently than other humans. Dr. Don Clifton analyzed the thought patterns, the feeling patterns, and the behavior patterns of large numbers of people, and he came up with a taxonomy of talents or strengths. So the AI that we hope to deploy across all these verticals will be fine-tuned to help you personally, based on your pathways of thinking, your patterns of thinking, feeling, behaving, of how the success models that will be easiest for you to apply so you could live a healthy life, a financially well-off life, have great relationships with family and friends, participate in your community, vote for the right people, make a difference where you live, just have rich, wonderful experiences of life that are available to us if we just choose them. If we can overcome the noises and the algorithms that operate against us and choose the signals and control the AI so that it does our bidding and helps us reach our full potential in our best moments when we yearn to be really good at something, to be a good person, to contribute a lot and not be subject to our physical limitations or weaknesses or diversions or distractions. In those moments where we get to program how the AI is going to help us, nudge us, commend us, motivate us, I think all of us will soon be in charge of our own AI, and it will help us reach a higher level of success than we ever thought possible.
Absolutely. And I want to bring this to the citizen.ai, which you were talking about the legislators and all the data that goes in these bills and the way that people vote and all that is so much data that politicians don't even have time to read. Voters, much less, don't have time to have access. They don't even have access to it in a lot of cases to be able to read it, even if they could. So what AI is able to do is process this data for us, right? And create and index it for us and create a visualization of these trends so we can be able to digest it and with our own human brains to be able to help us process it. So elaborate a little more on that.
Well, it's interesting that we have a legal code.
Okay.
When laws are passed, they're entered into the legal code. Well, we also have a software code. And when you think about software, you write code, you test the code, you execute it to see if it's bug free or if it's got bugs. And then when it's good enough, you release it. Okay. When we write laws, it's thousands of pages of legal code. And over the next few years, it's executed over time by imperfect humans in different organizations with competing interests. Sometimes they want to ignore some of the lines in the code. Sometimes they rebel against it. Sometimes they implement it. But is the code wise? Were the words written on that page and the votes in favor of it and the billions or trillions of dollars spent on those things, were those full of bugs? We don't know. Now, what if AI someday could predict that here's a 100-page bill, and based on all the analysis of other bills and other programs in other jurisdictions around the world or throughout the United States, the AI could simulate or predict what will happen when this is passed? Are there going to be some unintended consequences that are negative? Mm-hmm. And is this good code or bad code? I actually think the time will come where citizens and legislators alike will have an AI assistant that will help us create wise laws and policies and programs, and to eliminate regulations which turn out to be harmful to the economy, that decrease the graduation rate instead or harm educational outcomes. Like, we all want to live in a happy, productive world, right? Don't we all want that?
Yeah.
Well, we're not getting it. The current system is really broken. I think the founders were genius and very inspired in the checks and balances, distribution of powers. They didn't want a central authoritarian government. They didn't want a king. They didn't want a large federal, the last 100 years have seen a huge usurpation by the federal government of what used to be reserved to the states and to the people. I mean, it's crazy how big the federal government has gotten.
Yeah.
And there's been a little bit of pushback with the Supreme Court recently, but the genius of the founders was checks and balances, decentralization, and slowness, the deliberation process. Well, now, what if you take that genius of the founders and combine it with AI superintelligence that can help citizens and elected officials write really good laws and rules and eliminate regulations that are harmful and have a positive outcome for all participants in our society?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would we not want that? Well, there are a few people who want power and control and who want to be richer than everyone else. And so it's that kind of greed and power, that lust for power, that is potentially the biggest hindrance to a society of prosperous living for everyone. The world is abundant. There's so many resources. AI can help us discover other resources where there's rare earths. There might be other rare earths or nanotechnology and fabrication of molecules. I mean, like, we're on the cusp of ingenuity really creating abundance. But will that be abundantly distributed, or will it be hoarded and controlled by a few central powers, whether that is governments or corporations? I think we're all facing a really interesting time.
Absolutely.
And I like the people in the decentralized, distributed world and the bent that they have towards, hey, this should be good for everybody.
Yeah. It seems like we're approaching some kind of singularity, between IoT and blockchain and AI and all this stuff. And, you mentioned the founding fathers creating the Constitution and created in a decentralized way with the checks and balances. Information was moving slower then, and there was less of it. Now information is huge. It's more than we can process. So you're helping to create a project that will help us process that in a way, right? And to be able to index it. And a lot of times we don't even know what we're good at. And we say a lot of things over and over again without even knowing it. But if we could have some kind of third party entity to be able to tell us, you know, what do you say the most, you know, and again, keep track of that, I guess it can help you also find out about yourself. And that's really cool. But it has to be decentralized, is I think is probably the crucial point of this. And I guess that's why you're building on Morpheus.
We are looking at several decentralized and distributed computing systems.
Okay.
I'm going to MIT in April. There's a $500 million foundation called Project Liberty that has a decentralized social media protocol called DSMP.
Okay.
So we're looking at that. We're looking at Morpheus. We're looking at something out of Caltech as well. So we're looking at how do we navigate this world. And love the Morpheus presentation today. Very sure. excited to learn more about that and to participate in that. But yeah, it's necessary that a lot of people be careful of the powers that be and their desire to, you know, control the new technologies. In the name of safety, they could scare us all and say, well, okay, the, you know, central authority has to decide. I read Orwell's book. I read Huxley's book. I read the first dystopian novel from a Russian novelist called Zamyatin in 1921. Yeah, I've read Slaughterhouse-Five. I love dystopian novels because it's what I want to avoid.
Absolutely.
Any of those paths going forward. So then I get to cast my weight and hopefully create influence towards decentralized, distributed, abundant, open, systems that could benefit all. When Jonas Salk invented the polio vaccine and basically said, I'm not going to make any money from this. Like, I admire Linus Torvald and people that like could be billionaires, but instead they chose to create something amazing and make it available to everybody. Like, mm-hmm. if enough people do that, mm-hmm. we all should be pretty optimistic about the future.
100%. Yeah. You know, create a protocol, let everybody use it. I mean, the inventor of the TCP/IP protocol. I mean, did that person make any money? But anyway, I just thank you for just sharing what your project is about and how can people reach you and the project?
The best way to reach me is paul@soar.com.
Okay.
I try to respond to emails. If you don't hear from me, send me a second or a third, and either I or my assistant will try to respond. But soar.com is painting a picture of our various projects, and we're very excited about continuing to grow some of them. Citizen Portal is getting a lot of attention this year,
okay.
and Faith Portal is right around the corner, Founder Portal, Family Portal. There's going to be a lot of action coming out mm-hmm. from Soar's AI Studio very soon.
Amazing. Thanks for coming on to Crypto Sapiens. All right.
Thanks, John.